Thank you. I would first like to thank the coordinators for the opportunity to participate in this interesting program. And since we had the last talk on G-2 roughly 4 weeks ago, I hope you don't mind if I first guide you through the basics of the computations of G-2 and the lattice, or actually of the hadronic contribution, before I move to the idle spin breaking corrections. So let me remind you that the intrinsic magnetic moment of any spin particle is proportional to its spin. And then the free Dirac equation gives us this value for the zero magnetic moment to be equal to 2. And we know that the real value is different from 2. And if you want to compute the value of G factor, we have to take into account the quantum corrections. And this vertex of photon and lepton can be parameterized using these two very well-known form factors. So Fe is usually denoted also as F1, the Dirac factor, and Fm is also sometimes denoted as F2, probably in previous talks here as well. And so in the static limit, we know that the Born approximation gives us that this first factor is equal to 1, and we are interested in this second, the Pauli factor, at the momentum transfer 0. And this gives us the definition of the so-called anomalous magnetic moment of the lepton. And this G-2 thing is so the anomalous magnetic moment of the lepton is actually half of the difference of this zero magnetic factor with respect to this number estimated from the free theory too. So we can look at the anomalous magnetic moment of any of the known leptons, but why are we in particular interested in the magnetic moment of the muon? And the fact, the reason for that is that we can estimate the quantum fluctuations due to heavier particles or contributions from some higher energy states knowing the precision of the relative precision of the anomalous magnetic moment of the leptons. And then this mass M can be mass of any heavier standard model particle, or mass of some unknown BSM particle, or perhaps the scale of new physics. So again, why muon? Why not electron, for example? So the square of the mass of the muon is 4 × 10⁴ larger than the square of the mass of the electron. So this sensitivity is larger for the muon. The lifetime of tau is too short for its anomalous magnetic moment to be measurable in the experiment. So not even the fact that it's equal to 2 roughly has been measured for tau so far. So the anomalous magnetic moment of the muon is one of the best measured quantities in particle physics. And the final result of the BNL experiment gives its value to the precision of half a part per million. And current theoretical and experimental estimates give comparable precision, but the discrepancy between the experimental and theoretical estimates from the standard model is of the order of 3 sigma, depending which combination of the experimental phenomenological data is used in order to compute the theoretical uncertainty. So let me just also say that the new planned experiments in JPARC and Fermilab expect to perform 4 times more precise measurement of this quantity here. So they have, I think, they plan to improve the precision to 2.14 part per million or so. And therefore, in order to verify or to explain this discrepancy, to figure out whether there is some new physics waiting around the corner or not, the theoretical prediction needs to be improved as well. So this is the evolution of the tension between the theoretical and experimental measurement of the anomalous magnetic moment of the muon. And You can see here that experimental value did not oscillate that much. So basically, the data has been accumulated more and more. And while the theoretical one had slight deviation, and then this is the current theoretical value compared to the current experimental value. So the, as you probably heard, the experiment at BNL has been shut down, and the neon ring has been moved to Fermilab. So hopefully soon this value will be even improved on. But let's see what are the contributions which enter the theoretical uncertainty. So the dominating theoretical uncertainties come from the hadronic contributions. And those are the hadronic vacuum polarization and hadronic light by lights. So Tom Blum, they gave a nice talk on hadronic light by light a couple of weeks ago. You can look it up online if you haven't been here. And I'm mainly going to focus on the HVP here. And the reason why we are interested in these two hadronic contributions is that lattice provides us the setup from first principles for the computation of these contributions, which is completely independent from current phenomenological estimates. All right. So hadronic vacuum polarization can be computed in the Euclidean spacetime, and that's what allows us to compute it on the lattice. And so this case, the first computation with lattice QCD has been proposed by Tom Blum in 2003. And this is based on the fact that one can factorize the electroweak part here in the vertex and the part coming from the insertion of the quark loop, of the quark vacuum polarization. And so this electroweak function, which I call here f of q squared, is a known function. And this is peaked. So the good thing is known, but the thing which we will see later that troubles us a bit is that it's peaked around q squared equals zero. I mean, it's divergent at q squared equals zero. And this hadronic part is the infrared subtracted vacuum polarization, which in principle can be computed on the lattice. We compute it as a Fourier transform of the two-point vector correlator, and then extract the scalar vacuum polarization by applying the appropriate Lorentz factor. All right, so this is how the unsubtracted vacuum polarization on the lattice roughly looks like. And then after multiplying this function with the subjective vacuum polarization with this known electroweak function, one obtains this function here, roughly. So this is the integrand which has to be integrated out from zero to infinity of momenta. And so this is quite an old plot, but this illustrates really nicely the problems which lattice calculations used to face when one had to determine this infrared, the part needed for the infrared subtraction of the hadronic vacuum polarization, so pi of q squared. So this integrand here is peaked around the muon mass, as you can also see from the expression. And the inserted quark vacuum polarization, so after performing weak contractions, we get two contributions. One is the connected part, and the other one is the disconnected. The second one, it is very demanding computationally to extract the signal from this contribution. But there are chiral perturbation theory estimates that is of the order of 10% of the connected one. And there are also some direct estimates of the lattice in the progress. There are actually some more. I did not update this slide. Which actually limits the ratio of the disconnected to the connected to even smaller numbers. So I'm not going to discuss the disconnected contribution anymore in this talk. Yes? That's true. That's true. It's not completely clear, but also we've heard the estimates that the pi is the dominating part. So I guess it's of the order.
Sure. I mean, in principle, pi could see rho, but not in pi pt. You don't have it.
Sure.
So they're really seeing only the low energy 2 pi's and comparing the disconnected and connected contributions to the.
All right, that's a good point. That's a good point, and this is definitely something on to-do list of most of the collaborations working on computing this quantity and the lattice. As I said, there are also direct estimates from lattice. Okay, not yet at the physical pi and masses or something, but still they're limiting the upper bound to the disconnected contribution. At least what we have seen so far is 3 to 4%, something like that is the values which are floating around. But thanks. All right. So we have seen, in order to perform this infrared, to obtain the infrared subtracted value for vacuum polarization, there one option is to perform the fit of the data, which we obtained directly from the simulations for the vector-vector colorators. And the first fits, which were used to obtain this leading hadronic contribution to muon magnetic moment from the lattice, assumed the functional forms for pi of q squared, which were based on vector Meissen dominance. And this assumptions was model dependent and not very well physically motivated. And it has been shown later that it introduces a certain bias. I will comment on this a little bit later towards the end of the talk. So then in 2012, Obin, Blum, and Goltermann in Paris proposed to use Bade approximants to fit the vacuum polarization function. And they even proved the convergence theorem based on the Steltiev functions that there exists upper and lower bound to this certain form of the vacuum polarization, subtracted vacuum polarization function by the orders of Padé, nn and n plus 1. And so they're limiting from above and from below the vacuum polarization. So in principle, if one could have good enough lattice data in order to go high enough in the orders in Padé to fit higher Padés, one would be guaranteed to reach to the real vacuum polarization value. Then there is a second line of approaches which was started with HPQCD in 2014, the so-called time moments approach and different kind of moment approaches. And Christine has discussed this a couple of weeks ago here, so I won't go into the details here. The basics is that they compute the moments of the current-current correlators, and then they use them to reconstruct the approximations of pi of q squared, the subtracted value, directly. And this is the result which they have published for the strange and for the charm quark. And the precision, the claim precision for the strange is around 1%, which is pretty much encouraging. So if you're interested in this moments method, I suggest you to look at Taku's plenary on this year's Lattice conference, which was focusing mainly on different approaches with moments method. And now I'm just going to illustrate how those these different methods, so fittings and moment methods, can be applied to obtain the strange contribution and how do they compare. So these are the slides from the Lattice conference of my colleague from RBC UKQCD, Matt Spraggs. And he's using the main wall fermions, 2+1 flavor. And he estimates the strange contribution to AMU from two physical quark mass ensembles. So this is just the vacuum polarization from the strange quark. You may notice that these large error bars, which we had at low momenta in the light quark region, is not visible here. So the error bars are included here. So the strange quark vacuum polarization is statistically much more precise than the light quark one. And then different values of fits, moments, and another approach, the recent approach, which allows for the so-called sine cardinal construction, so which allows for reaching not only Fourier momenta, but continuous momenta, is applied. So then different kind of Padé approximants and conformal polynomials are used for the fits, and different cuts in Q squared are used in all these approaches. So the high cut is the Q squared value where we match the perturbation theory, and the low cut is the value where we stop fitting or stop using the moments method, and between these two values we use just a numerical integration. This is the so-called hybrid method, which I will give a reference for that one on one of the succeeding slides. So for the strange HVP, the results from all of these methods fall basically on the same value. So this is the histograms of all possible combinations with the different kind of cuts. It's like three different low cuts, three different high cuts, and all combinations of approaches with fits and moments and sine cardinal construction. I'm not 100% sure, but usually low order Padés. We can see maybe if it's clear enough. So if the color coding is, so this is 1, 2, I think, the one on the left. But I don't know which value, probably also higher value of the cut, but I'm not 100% sure on that one. But let's say that the lower order Padés are for sure. But they still give good chi-square, so they're plotted here on the list. It's just like the histogram of the central values. All right, and then after continuum extrapolation has been performed for these two ensembles, the value which is obtained is in the agreement with the previously mentioned HPQCD result for the strange quark mass. So the situation for strange is rather bright. So we believe that we can control this uncertainty and that the precise value for this quantity from the lattice is possible at the moment. Now, the light HVP is much noisier than strange, and we are still fighting the statistics to obtain the value which can be comparable with the even current experimental precision. You can see Christine's talk here a couple of weeks ago. She was talking about their result on the light hadronic vacuum polarization. Then even if we manage to have the statistical precision comparable to the one which we have for the strange, for this contribution, it is very important to understand the systematics. And I list here the standard systematic effects which need to be included if one wants to have a sub-percent precision of the hadronic observables on the lattice. So other than those standard sources and uncertainties, there are also some uncertainties related to the fits. If one using fitting for the vacuum polarization function, there are other kind of uncertainties related for the particular choice of the moment-based method. And all of this has to be mastered before we would be able to give a sub-percent result for the hadronic vacuum polarization from the lattice. So there are many interesting recent advantages which I don't have time to mention here, and I list some of them in arbitrary order, and I'm sure I missed many of them. So it's been encouraging that the interest in this topic is increasing from year to year in the lattice community. And I will only mention one of the recent proposals, how to control the systematics of the fits which are included in the hadronic vacuum polarization. And this proposal comes from Martin Goldterman, Kim Altman, and Santi Peris. And it is based on the phenomenological model of the HVP. So they use the same R ratios which are used from the which are used by the in the phenomenological estimations of the anomalous magnetic moment, but they take the only the eigenspin 1 component, which is present in the tau-based decays, and they use only the momentum range in which this experimental input is precise enough. In order to learn how to control the systematics from the lattice data. So if one takes the phenomenological input here and computes this, they call it the vacuum polarization coming from the dispersion relation here, but like in this particular momentum range, they obtain a very precise result from the experiment. And then they take the central values from the experiment and then use the fake lattice data in order to perform, so to pretend that this data actually came from the lattice simulations, reduce the uncertainties. So imagine that in a certain amount of time, we will have better uncertainties than we have so far, and then test different kind of fits, which are used in lattice simulations. In lattice estimations of the HVP, in order to verify which of the fits describes the experimental data best. And then, as I mentioned before, vector meson dominances, which were not phenomenologically, which were not physically well motivated, they fail to describe this particular integral, which has a similar form as the hadronic vacuum polarization, while the proposed Padea approximants, as one moves to higher Padeas and as one reduces the range, the fitting range, one actually achieves the experimental value. So this is just a playground, a test model, which should guide us once we decide to fit the real lattice data. It goes to infinity, but QC is the cut where we match the perturbation theory. So up to QC, it's done from the data, and from QC to there is another cut which I omitted. Yeah, so this is the cut, QC is the cut where we stop fitting, and then there is some higher value so between QC and QH, which is like the higher cut. We use just numerical integration because the lattice data is usually there precise enough, and then it's matched to the perturbation theory. So it does go to the infinity, but.
Yeah.
between Reed and Legrand, between those, this is a good point. So the theorem tells you that if you have precise, basically data with uncertainty zero, in a sense. So when you introduce the uncertainties from your measurements on the lattice, then the theorem is not. No. Can you tell us again? Sorry. No, this is not the case here. So, this is another case. So it's. Sorry, I did not hear the last.
What?
I didn't hear your last.
I heard that when you said that the business about the errors that rang the bell, but I've heard that before from someone else, the Lepage name, said that there's a theorem that when you add error bars, the error bars don't commute with the assumptions of the theorem.
That's true, but this is not the same method as Lepage is using in FPQCD, because this is the expansion around zero, which Laurent was mentioning, and this one is using Padiez at the different values of Q squared. So it gives the limit at E to Q squared, but in the ideal case. Actually, now, when you stopped me here, I'll actually jump to the conclusions, because I stole this illustration from Laurent's talk, but I didn't know whether it would be interesting or not, so I put it in the backup slides. So you can see here that if you do the Taylor expansion around zero, that like it's jumping away from the vacuum polarization. So this is the same type of like fake vacuum polarization, the one taken from the dispersive analysis in the range where the data is precise. And then if you plot Padiez like Laurent did, then it's then the higher order, so they're just approaching the vacuum polarization function. So it is an indication, at least. This is just for you to get a feeling, but there is also this mathematical proof in the paper of Martin Kim and Santi. All right. So I'll be moving away from the determination of the hadronic vacuum polarization here. So we have seen that there is still some work to do to achieve the sub percent precision for the light quark contribution and for the combined one. Finally, but once this precision of the connected part from the lattice is achieved, then we will have to think, because I mean this is a really high precision we are aiming at, we will have to think about the effects which we neglected so far, like the disconnected contribution, then isospin breaking corrections, then heating charm in the sea, which actually these two collaborations are already doing. And if we want actually to be able to verify the error coming from the theory and potentially be competitive with the experimental error. So the reason why I mentioned previously Dowdy case is because this has motivated me to look closer into how the phenomenological value for the hadronic vacuum polarization is obtained. And then when I looked into some old estimations from E plus E minus data, and on the other hand from tau decays, I've seen that there was a huge discrepancy, which over the years actually became smaller, but it's still there. And the original source of this discrepancy between the two estimations of, was actually related to isospin breaking corrections. So the E plus E minus is the neutral channel, and the vacuum polarization, so both isovector and isoscalar part of the vacuum polarization are present there, while the tau decays contained only the isovector part of the vacuum polarization. So in order to obtain a combined result, a phenomenological result is usually quoted as a combined one from the two estimates, one needs to apply isobic breaking corrections to do one of the two. Usually, actually, I think a part is applied to the E plus E minus data in order to isolate only the isovector component. And until 2011, incomplete correction for the two for the isospin breaking corrections has been applied, and only after Jaeger-Lenard and Shafron introduced this model, which besides rho omega mixing also adds the contribution of the rho gamma mixing, the agreement between the two estimates have been achieved. So this is this point here. So basically tau plus E plus E minus agrees with E plus E minus estimate now. So it is not clear how the importance of these isospin breaking effects translate to the Euclidean, but before actually, so after applying this correction, there were some ranges of the R ratio where this correction actually added 20%, for example. And then I thought that it would be good to have a model-independent estimate of the isospin breaking effects, and that's where lattice QCD comes in, if we would know how to treat the QD effects. And we do. So the other kind of motivation was something which actually this proposal I was telling you about on the previous slide. Basically, since it is using tau data and the isospin correction has been already applied there, then if we want to use that as the guidance for our fit from the lattice, then we might as well, it would be good to understand these isospin breaking corrections fully before relying on this data. So all necessary ingredients to compute the isospin breaking corrections for the hadronic vacuum polarization are there. So there is this method which I'm going to talk about here, the so-called ROM123 method, which they apply to compute leading isospin breaking corrections to the different hadronic observables. And it is based on expanding an observable in the isospin broken theory with respect to the isosymmetric result. So this is using the gauge configurations which are generated in the isosymmetric theory. So for a start, I will apply it to the connected part of the hadronic vacuum polarization, but exactly the same procedure would go for the disconnected. Just one would have to compute a lot more disconnected diagram than just the one which is the next order for the contribution in the isosymmetric theory. So the main advantage of this approach of expanding in the observable in the isospin broken theory with respect to the isosymmetric one is that the diagrams which are obtained individually, and so one obtains diagrams in this expansion before they have to be multiplied with some constants which are of the order of alpha electromagnetic or order of the quark-mach differences, which can diminish the signal. And the other thing is that there is no extrapolation in alpha electromagnetic needed. So this method is actually reusing the, as I said, the gauge configurations generated in the isosymmetric theory. It does the rewriting of the configuration, so derivating of the observable, so with respect to the isosymmetric theory. And then for simplicity, in most of the ROM 1 to 3 estimations, and also in this first step of this computation here, we approximate C quarks as electrically neutral. So then this ratio is actually equal to 1. The derivating factor, and then the next thing which we have to take care about is actually something which is pretty obvious, but not always mentioned or not thought of in the beginning of this kind of project, is that QED plus QCD and QCD are actually two different theories. So actually, it's not trivial to define the differences which we like to call isospin breaking corrections of the theory, in which includes QED plus QCD, with respect to the theory which includes only QCD, so the isosymmetric one. And when there is an appropriate renormalization, actually several options for appropriate renormalization procedure which have to be applied before one can actually define the so-called isospin breaking correction, which would be defined as a difference between the value of a certain observable in the two theories. So I will talk about the leading isospin breaking correction, so the first term in the expansion. Yes. So we have this is alpha, so the alpha electromagnetic, yes. Then so as we said here, these are two different theories, so there is the change in the, yes, the strong coupling. Then the quark masses also, the divergences are created, and we have to cancel them. So there is a different quark mass, different bare, or different also different bare quark masses needed for all quarks which iterate in the theory. And then also the critical masses have to be determined separately for both of the theories. And we have to expand in all of these differences. It is if you have mu different from md. Yes. So in the QD plus QCD, it is. That. Well, you can get this, but then you have to set the scale. From some from the full theory, yes, yes, that's true. So one can I can avoid this part automatically, but there is also I mean the approach I didn't write down these equations, but the approach which is used here is to match the two scales match the two theories at a certain scale, at a fixed scale, and then in this case you don't get this part automatically, but what you get is that actually you can write down this kind of expansion and compute the differences term by term. I mean the.
Yeah.
Actually, okay. I have an illustration here. Yeah, so it's like, so if you look, so this is this last term. So if you take an example of the quark, of the quark propagator and all possible corrections that you can have. So basically, this is just the first order in the expansion, which I wrote down in the previous equation. And then this is the term which we are talking about. But so this is like the Lonic interaction and the quark. But it's like, but this term is. Yeah, okay, so this term is not sensitive to the C quarks at all. Yes, so the red thing is all the diagrams that are neglected, each, if one assumes that the C quarks are electrically neutral, and then the blue one is actually the one where the quark propagator doesn't fill the C quarks, and this is usually neglected. So the whole red square is neglected in current computations. In principle. This term, in particular, doesn't have to be of the different order of magnitude than the previous ones. So the plan is to include them in the future computations.
That's one of the downsides of the real
magnitude. That's true. That's true. Yeah, but you also have to set the scale.
No, but if you, that's true.
But if you want to define your isospin breaking correction, you anyway have to set the scale both in the full theory and also in the isosymmetric theory. So whether you set the scale twice, so you do this difference, I don't really see the disadvantage of that part. I agree fully with this thing that you have to compute a lot of diagrams, and some of them are also disconnected, so we still don't have the techniques, but the techniques for the disconnected are progressing. So in a sense, it is doable. It's just. If you have, sorry.
In your configuration, so not the row, but
electromagnetic. Okay.
Then all the observable be computed, which you usually do in QCD, so they're very simple. So you have a mass, which is the 2-point function, where it's here.
True. That's true, but then again, yes. So there are also, that's true, there are the advantages, there are disadvantages as well. I think I list them on the next slide, the disadvantages, or the one after this one. So so this is the results of this method for computing other observables are reviewed in this talk from Nazario Tantalo in Lattice Conference 2013, and then they compute pi and k and mass splitting, Dachshund theorem, breaking parameter, the quark mass differences, and the advantage of this one is that the numerical signal is of the isospin breaking correction is actually really good, but there are also the disadvantages, which are the fact that many diagrams have to be computed, The other thing is that not only the standard, as Laurent just mentioned, the standard correlation functions have to be computed, which we usually do to extract masses and so on, but even if we want to compute the mass differences, we already have to include some three-point functions and four-point functions, which can be numerically demanding, and the disconnected ones if we want to go beyond this electrofrequential approximation, which I previously described. But it's still possible to do that. It just requires careful organization of your computation, and hopefully the advances of the techniques for computation of the disconnected diagrams. So coming back to the hadronic vacuum polarization, so this technique has proven to be successful for computing corrections to different hadronic observables, but they were mainly pseudoscalar quantities. And if we want to do the same procedure on the vector, we might also face some additional obstacles. So just from QCD experience, pure QCD, if you look at the pseudoscalar correlator and the same statistic, we look at the vector correlator, we see that there are some additional obstacles we have to face here in order to control the vector quantities. So I do this simple test on the two ensembles of CLS based configurations. It's like two flavor order improved Wilson fermions. And so one can apply the same procedure. So basically the leading order which of the expansion of the observable, which I previously wrote down. So after performing the corresponding derivatives and multiplying with these coefficients, one gets the first couple of diagrams which one has to compute if one wants to have the correction, the isospin breaking correction for the hadronic vacuum polarization, the connected part. And the three dots basically not all the diagrams in the red box, which I neglected for the KM mass differences. So there is a bunch of things, like the first one basically which we need to compute is the another disconnected thing, but this is then there are many other things which one has to include if one wants to go beyond the electroquenched. But as I said, hopefully the disconnected techniques will be available soon, and then we will be able to add that. So just applying this method bluntly with the same statistics as one uses for extraction of the hadronic vacuum polarization, which is plotted here, one can see that the corrections are small, but the signal is there. I mean, it is actually not correct to talk about the size of these corrections yet, because there's some only makes sense after the renormalization. So one has to retune the parameters, the critical parameters of the theory, which I did not do yet. So this was just a test to see whether the signal can be extracted from these quantities, even though it's vector-vector. This is just zoomed in, and I'm sorry that I did not provide the scales here, but this is the same thing as here, just different color coding, unfortunately, and zoomed, because here I plot only this tadpole and self energy contribution, what I call tadpole. So it's clear from here. So this is the tadpole and the self energy one. I also computed this one, but this is not on the plots yet, because I finished this recently. But so after tuning the critical masses for both theories, one needs to include also the mass insertions. in order to get the finite result in the continuum limit. And so these are the two basically techniques, so the two options for the randomization, which we already discussed a little bit here. So the first one is the one which is used here. This is where we define we basically match the two theories at some arbitrarily fixed randomization scale. And the other option is, as Laurent and Taco already mentioned, is to use the determinations of charged mesons to fix quark masses and the lattice spacings, both in the isosymmetric and in the full theory.
Is?
Pure QCD, yes. You would get the thing, yes. But if you take the ratio after tuning the critical parameters and everything, so after, otherwise you are not guaranteed to get a finite ratio. All right, so that would be all. These are some technical advances which we can still do. So other than the disconnected diagrams that we just mentioned, already this computation can be improved by using a better solver or having more sources or changing the source. But these are technicalities which we can discuss later if you're interested in. And we have heard yesterday in Agostino's talk in detail what is the problem when we actually want to put the photon propagator on the lattice. And currently, the approach which I'm using is the one which was most criticized yesterday, so the one which subtracts the global zero mode. That's the simplest thing to do. And so this violates reflection positivity and also does not have a well-defined limit as t goes to infinity. And this is discussed in detail, for example, in the BMW science paper, which I quote here. Then there is a second option to remove the zero mode on each time slice separately. And this is the trivial modification of the code. And one should definitely do at least that. And then there is also this possibility to perform this type of calculations, but with C star boundary conditions. And as the finite volume effects for masses are even smaller, one can hope that the same happens also here, but one has to see that. And yes, the disconnected contributions are last on my list, but probably not least important. And I'm already at my conclusions. I have plenty of backup slides, so I hope that we can have some more discussions after I'm done with the basic part here. So we've seen that mu anomalous magnetic moment is good for constraining new physics. And so the lattice QCD gives us an independent theory prediction for hadronic contribution for the HVP QCD and for hadronic light by light, both QCD and QED. Then on the HVP front, strange contribution seems to be under control. Light still needs a lot of work, but I'm hopeful that that the required precisions will be achieved in due time. And the experimental precision is going to be improved 4 times, so at such a small precision, so such a high accuracy, some effects which we used to neglect so far also might play an important role, and we have to have control of all of them. One of them, the isospin breaking effect, and even though we are not yet there to see this, it's useful to think ahead and to develop techniques to compute these contributions. Yeah. So this is a difficult task, but this method, I hope, would give a better signal. That's why I was simulating the full theory for the first argument, which I said the fact that we are computing diagrams before multiplying them with these small coefficients of the expansion. But definitely, if anybody is interested, I would be really happy to see the results, at least in the QCD plus quenched QED, if not even in the full QED, in the full theory of the same quantity, and to compare the two. And and even if, so the tests which I did were done with, on the strange quark mass as well as the current HVP determinations, and there are still many things to understand before, and it's not even sure if we would get a signal in the light sector. This is the next thing we want to try, and there are many things to understand, but the first one will probably find volume effects because we have QD in the game. Thank you. Yes.
How big do you think, in units that are relevant to the problem, do you think the isospin correction is going to be?
I don't know. So that's why I'm computing.
The frequency is, it's 290 or something in some units. It seems everybody uses a different convention.
Everybody uses Well, everybody uses a different convention, but at least.
So it should be something like the down-up mass difference divided by mu. Is that something that would capture the mass effect? Is that the right way to scale it?
I'm not really sure if it's actually proportional to masses here. And this difference which I'm talking about, it's about 16 these units, for example, because.
So when you have E plus E minus, right, you have the photon, you have all the stuff, so there's no isospin correction in getting from E plus E minus to down.
That's true, but
E minus 2. But in the case of the tau, it's mediated by W, so there are big isospin corrections that you have to apply to get from the tau data to the thing that yields stuff into the G minus 2 energy. I thought you were talking about calculating the part of the hadronic bubble that Tom and everybody else calculate.
That's true.
In the case when M up is not equal to M down.
That's true, but let me go back to the experiment for a moment. And it's true, the huge isospin breaking correction has to be applied, and it has been applied since the beginning of the determination. Otherwise, one cannot. So one has to just rotate and apply. And this has been done, and all of them that could have been accounted for perturbatively, and this was the long discussion during the Christine's talk. So. Applying not chiral perturbation theory, but some extended effective theories, which also take into account the isolon, the spin one mesons, and so on, and everything that could have been unperturbatively has been done, and still there is a small discrepancy. So then this is the, but I'm talking only about HVP here. So when you, okay, there is a discrepancy in the total result, but if one looks at the HVP extracted from the two experiments, there is also a discrepancy. So the HVP from the phenomenology, because different contributions can be, some of the contribution can be isolated from the R ratios.
If this is turning tau data from something called W's.
Yes.
Something that
belongs. That's true.
Was wanting to know what is the size of the isospin breaking corrections. There you are asking, do you want to know?
Well, I don't
think about discrepancies.
want to know what that is, you know, at least within a factor of two, because you want to know what all of these additional effects you want to include. So on the previous slide, you mentioned that sometimes you have to get it disconnected by a grant.
Yes.
But if you're looking at 2% effect, 2% of the disconnected diagrams, which are already a 3 or 4% if we're pushing it.
But this is not the same disconnected diagram. That's true, but I mean, so first of all, I don't know how big the correction is. That's why I'm doing the independent computation. Order of magnitude. So if you look at the isospin breaking corrections for quark masses or something like that, I mean, you get an order of percent. So we want the total contribution up to the with the percent level. So if the isospin breaking correction is, let's say, 0.2%, it's already important.
What balances the dimensions of the mass splitting of the
outports? Let's say
the QCD, which is the case in hadron masses, or is it the muon mass, which is quite a bit smaller?
Well, I'm not sure. So it's hadron. Yeah.
So the question is, if you're doing like
but also here for the. So this is the case here as well. So I would be perfectly happy with 10% accuracy, or 20% even, if it is a sub-percent effect. It depends. If it's a larger value. Well, because I don't know, because I'm telling you, so the estimate of the disconnected which we have for the hadronic vacuum polarization, it's not necessarily the same disconnected which I've shown you here. So, I mean, okay, you expect some, like if you look at the large N and so on, you expect some suppression, but these are not the same diagrams as the second weak contraction which I've shown you. Yeah, so I mean, you see that there are different types of diagrams, and you don't. They might be the same order of the
disconnected
ones. Yes. Yes. Exactly. That's what I was saying. Sorry. So this type of things. I mean, okay. Or
the guys in the blue box.
Yeah. This one, for example. This is something which is not there, but it's. It can be of the same order as the connected one, which I'm including.
Other questions?
I see.
I think that's a good point. I mean, you know, did Jaeger Lehner company stop when the tau data analysis was reconciled with E plus and minus? But does that mean that it's really right?
It's
Well, I don't think it's not right, but I mean, but they also say that not all the contributions are accounted for. So I mean, beyond like rho omega, they add rho zero gamma, but they also list the contribution they didn't take into account. But
no,
but this, you know, this is
not
sure.
It is a bit of a dark art.
Sorry, 0.6. So almost the same as. Yeah. Almost the same as the experimental. Taku was trying to say that you should call it new physics or what? Sorry, Chris, I did not hear.
Are you done?
any more questions for Marina, or are we into lunchtime discussion already? Looks like we're into lunchtime discussion already, so let's thank her for the nice talk.